Live from all over Phoenix, Arizona, flooding Phoenix, Arizona, I should say. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4 o'clock. That's every Monday and Tuesday, second Monday and Tuesday of the month, I should say. And brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. I'm Dave Isaac, and I know I have Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon on the line. Guys, how are you? Or one of you guys.
I'm here.
Doing
good.
Hey, Paul.
I'm doing good, too.
Oh, good. You were both polite, waiting for each other. Now, I will say that thank God for technology, because major rainstorms last night, floods all over the place. So we're actually all in different locations, but that's what technology has done for the world, making it easier. And there we go. Let's do a weather report real quick before we introduce our special guest. Kim, how's Chandler doing?
Chandler's doing much, much better. We can actually take our dog for a walk. Poor thing. He was practically able to swim down the alleyways of our complex.
Yeah, this is incredible. I heard it's the worst rain in 75 years. I guess worst meaning the most inches of rain. And, Paul, how are you doing? And I think you're in Scottsdale.
It's kind of sunny and dry here, but it wasn't this morning.
Yeah, it's been rough. It's a little bit better out west in Phoenix where I'm at, so not too bad, but a lot of damage. But anyway, at least we're all together for Understanding Autism on this great Monday afternoon, 3 o'clock Phoenix time. And let's introduce our guest, Professor James Adams, Ph.D., President of the Autism Society of Greater Phoenix, a director of ASU Autism Asperger's Research Program, and president of Autism Nutrition Research Center. James, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Thank you so much for calling. And, of course, Kim and Paul are on the line. Say hello to James.
Howdy.
Hi, Dr. Adams. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
My pleasure, Kim and Paul.
All righty. So Dr. Adams, tell us a little bit about your topic today. I know last time you were on, it was most fascinating, and I'm very interested in today's topic as well. What are we going to be talking about?
Today we're going to be talking about gut problems in children with autism. Many children and adults with autism have serious GI problems, and that's what we want to talk about, both what the problems are, what current treatments are, and what we're doing with a new research study at ASU to investigate a new treatment.
Great. And so where would you like to start? I mean, you said there's a new treatment. Is that a good place, or do you want to give a little history of how gut problems impact people on the spectrum?
Yeah, I think let's start, first of all, with what the symptoms are and where we think they come from, because I think that'll help better understand the treatment that we're doing. We know from many different studies that have been done that it's very common for children with autism to have chronic constipation or chronic diarrhea, or sometimes alternating between the two. Sometimes they'll also have reflux or acid reflux up their esophagus, or in more extreme cases, even vomiting. And then as time goes on, if these GI problems aren't dealt with, then they can lead to worse problems as well. So inflammation throughout the GI tract, so from burning in their esophagus to inflammation throughout the intestines, and the problem sometimes can get worse as they get older. In general, we know from large studies that gut problems are as common or even slightly more common in the adults than in the children. Just to give you one example.
Yeah, just a quick question, Dr. Adams. Do they know why it's, and I assume it's more common with people on the spectrum, why that's, what causes that?
Yeah, I mean, anyone can have diarrhea or a constipation that lasts a few days, but in these kids with autism, these are symptoms that can last for years, and sometimes they can be very severe. I was speaking with a family the other day, and their child had just returned from 6 days in the hospital because they were so severely constipated. It was really a very serious condition. And unfortunately, this is they've had to go there every few months to get cleared out. There's the child just isn't able to have a normal BM, and it's becoming a really major problem for the child.
And is that physiologically related, or is there something connected psychologically with being on the spectrum, or do they know?
Well, there's probably a little bit of both. Certainly if a child has, certainly it can take a long time to get children to become potty trained for kids with autism, and that's partly because they don't necessarily understand the process. They don't have the language for parents to talk with them very well. It can also be, though, we think physiological, that they just don't sense the signals that their body is telling them. And then if they have constipation for a long time, then the colon actually can become permanently damaged, permanently distended, and then it's harder for them. So in each bowel movement can become very painful, and so they want to avoid it. And they avoid it and avoid it until it builds up, and then they have another massive bowel movement, and then it's painful again. So this is going to
totally
be a very...
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm going to say this is going to be a real gruesome show in some of the ways we talk. You know, it's just like Eskimos have many words for snow and ice. Parents of kids with autism have many words for poop. And that's what we're going to talk about today and how to help them.
As part of, you may be getting to this, and this may be a question that you can answer later. However, as part of the therapy, and maybe this is a Kim question as well, maybe Paul as well, is that something teachable? You mentioned sometimes they don't realize the signals about, in terms of their when to go, when not to go. You said constipation. Is that something that can be taught with the younger people as well as older people on the spectrum?
Yeah, that's not my main focus, but certainly I think just taking the children into the bathroom preemptively and just doing it regularly so they get an opportunity to just become familiar sitting in the bathroom or sitting in a potty when they're younger, and just getting them used to it, watching mom or dad as appropriate so they know what they're supposed to do.
Excellent. Okay, great. So, yeah, let's go on with what else you've discovered and how to handle this.
So I think just to say again a little bit about how serious a problem it can become. A couple years ago I testified in a court case where a mother had lost custody of her son because her son had very severe GI issues. Her son was about 16 years old, had severe GI problems, and so the only way he could have a bowel movement is he'd literally, and this will be a little gross, he literally would dig his hands up into his bottom and pry it out, and then he'd smear it all over his house. And so when a social worker came in and found, you know, the whole house is full of fecal smearing, which he'd done for years, then they took the child away from the mom and blamed the mom for this bad state of the home, whereas the poor mom's been doing all she could. And the poor mother, because she worked for social services, then lost her job because her child had been taken away. So it was a huge problem for this poor mom. And then she was dragged into court, so I testified before the judge and explained, this is not the mother's fault. Poor woman's doing all she can as a single mom, and her child has a severe gut problem. And so when we see these kids 16 years old, still in diapers, still unable to control their bowels, that's when we know this is a serious issue and can become life-threatening, and we need to help them.
Wow. Just out of curiosity, did the judge understand? I know it might be a little off topic, but it is sort of interesting that, and sad that she would be blamed and lose her job and her children, her child.
Once I testified, the judge was very understanding and released her and directed CPS to give her back her child. I'd like to think she got a job back, but I haven't heard.
Yeah. Gotcha. Wow. So this is pretty significant, isn't it? How common is it with those on the spectrum?
Well, about half of children and adults have serious chronic GI issues, and it really affects quality of life. I mean, if you've ever been constipated for a few days, you have a sense of how uncomfortable it can be, how irritating. It makes it hard to think, hard to concentrate, hard to pay attention in school. But we think it's more than that. We think actually that the cause of these GI problems are bad bacteria in the gut. And a normal person has about 1,000 different species of bacteria in the gut that are actually very helpful. They play very important roles in helping us digest food, to help make certain key vitamins that we don't get enough of from our diet. And very importantly, help us fight off bad bacterial infections like E. coli that you might get after eating old food or hamburger. And so a healthy bacteria in your gut is very, very important. And what we found in kids with autism when we looked at their medical histories, the one most striking feature of the medical histories of kids with autism was generally that they had a high usage of oral antibiotics during their first 3 years of life. So we published several studies on this. Other groups have confirmed our studies that kids with autism had 2 to 3 times as much use of oral antibiotics as kids. And the problem is that the oral antibiotics, when you take them, they'll kill off 90% or so of your regular gut bacteria. Now, many of those may then regrow in the next few weeks and months, but you might not get all of them growing back. And that's the concern, that each round probably kills off more and more of the species. And so we know for people from Africa or South America on healthy diets, we know they may have about 1,500 species of gut bacteria, whereas people on Western diets may have only 1,000, and kids with autism have even worse. They're just missing a lot of the beneficial gut bacteria.
Wow, so that leads to, I guess part of the treatment would be a very, very healthy diet to keep your gut healthy?
Right. That's a big part of what we encourage families to do is eating a healthy diet. And so lots of fiber can help because the fiber is actually an important food for some of the good bacteria. So that can help. But it seems that often that is not enough of an issue. Going to a gluten-free, casein-free diet, some children with autism can't digest gluten very well. Some can't digest dairy products very well. And we've discovered, actually, why it is that many of them have problems with dairy. That there have been 3 studies, including one at Harvard Medical School with 200 children and adults with autism. And they actually, these were individuals who were severe enough, they went to get an endoscopy at Harvard Medical School. And what they found is as part of the endoscopy, they take a little biopsy, a little tissue, and measure the body's ability to make digestive enzymes. And they found that kids with autism were often lacking the digestive enzymes. They need to digest sugars and starches, especially the sugar in milk called lactose, that they're lactose intolerant because they don't have enough lactase, the enzyme that's needed to digest the sugar in milk, the lactose.
Wow, so there's a lot of causes for this. Dr. Adams, we're going to take a quick break. Stay on the phone, please, and want to continue this discussion. And, of course, this is Understanding Autism, and I'm Dave Isaac alongside Kim Isaac, Paul Loudon, and our very special guest is Dr. James Adams, Ph.D., and we'll be right back after these words.
It's always great to have a friend in business. That's why we encourage you to reach out to Brandon Ross at Burt Carpenter Financial, a full-service residential lender. Call now for exceptional service and an accurate pre-qualification. Connect with him online at BrandonRossHomeLoans.com or by phone at 602-953-7826, 602-953-7826. Brandon Ross, NMLS number 858655, and Burke Carpenter Financial, NMLS number 142159.
It's now time for the Word Association Game. Contestants, go ahead.
Bars. Meat market. Gas.
High prices.
Politicians.
Liars.
Auto mechanics.
Ripoff. Guys, whoa, wait a minute here. Not when I think of my auto mechanic, I think of trust, care, safety, and fairness. This sounds like the definition of a friend, which was what Alexander's All Care Automotive Repair achieves with his customers. The peace of mind that comes with the mechanic that puts you first. Located at 3310 East Thomas Road, Phoenix, 85018. Call 602-956-3781. 602-956-3781.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Back again. You're listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4 of each month. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. Our very special guest today is Professor James, Professor and Dr. James Adams, President of Autism Society of Greater Phoenix. And Kim, I know you have some comments and questions regarding what we've been talking about, gut problems with those on the spectrum.
I do. I actually work with a couple of families whose children have those severe gut problems, and I noticed for these particular families that their children also seem to be sick quite often, and I've just personally read, you know, different pieces of information about the gut and the immune system, and I was wondering, Dr. Adams, what your thoughts were on that, and if you noticed that the children or the adults on the spectrum who experience gut problems have a correlation with being sick more frequently?
That's a great question. There's no doubt that the immune system is about 70% focused in the gut. Because you think about how you're normally exposed to different bacteria and viruses, it's from the food you eat, from what you drink, that goes into your gut, and then it is exposed to you very intimately that way. And so that's why the immune system very carefully monitors what's in your gut and decides what to attack, but equally important, hopefully recognizes what the good bacteria are and knows not to waste time attacking those, or it would even be harmful if it did. So the interplay of the gut of the gut bacteria with the immune system is important and a subject of ongoing research. I will say that in our current study, we have noticed that quite a few of the children with autism also have immune system problems. So one part of the immune system is called secretory IgA. It's a type of immunoglobulin that's secreted along the GI tract, and it helps protect against what you're exposed to there. And so if kids with autism are low in secretory IgA, then they'd be more vulnerable to infections. So I think you're very right, Kim, that there's certainly a tie-in there, that if you have a weakened immune system, you'd be more vulnerable to infections in the gut.
So even if these individuals, I guess what I've noticed, and maybe I just need to make sure they have your contact information, but they will do things like immune system-related things, like maybe take more vitamin C or vitamin D3, but is it more important to actually treat the gut portion first and then look at those other things? Is there some sort of hierarchy to that?
I'm going to be a little cautious since I'm a researcher, not a physician. So I'd say for an individual, you need to consider what the symptoms are or what the illness is and then talk with their physician about treating that. But I think that long term, the issue is that these gut problems can be very long lasting. And these immune system problems can also be very long lasting. And so I think treating both are very important. Luckily, we learned a lot in the last few years to give us a lot of insight on how to treat the gut problem issues in kids with autism. And so that's one of the things we've noticed is that the kids with autism who have more severe GI problems also tend to have more severe autism. They tend to have worse language problems, worse social problems, worse cognitive problems, worse behavioral problems. You know, if you're in pain, you're just going to be more irritable. You're just going to have a harder time interacting with other people just because of the discomfort. But we think it's more than that. We think those gut bacteria are actually producing toxins that affect not only the gut but also affect the brain. And a great example of this I like to give is if you've ever been to a bar on a Saturday night and you've noticed the effect that alcohol has on people's thinking and on their behavior. Alcohol is actually made by the yeast in your gut. Each day a person has, the yeast in your gut makes about a half ounce of alcohol, and the yeast and bacteria in your gut can make some much nastier toxins too that affect your GI function and your mental function even much more severely than alcohol. So it just shows an example of how important those are.
You know, as you're talking, Dr. Adams, and again, let me know if this is a little off topic, but Kim did bring up the immune system issues, and you mentioned you've seen those on the spectrum having weak immune systems. Does that lead to, do you find people on the spectrum then have more serious diseases because of the weakened immune system?
It depends. That there are certainly some children who have parts of their immune system that are seriously imbalanced, and they'll get what's called IVIG therapy, so intravenous immunoglobulin. So these are kids who are missing some of their natural immunoglobulins. Their body just isn't making them or is making very small amounts, and so they'll give them supplemental amounts of immunoglobulins. And that seems to help somewhat. But often those gains are only temporary unless they treat very long term, a year, year and a half. So some of those kids will be more vulnerable to infections. Strep infections and strep-like infections are certainly common. And yet other kids with autism have the problem that their immune system is too strong, that it's too active, and actually begins attacking their body. And so we call this an autoimmune reaction. The immune system begins attacking itself. So it's probably best to say that in autism, the immune system is dysregulated, sometimes too strong and attacking itself, and sometimes parts of it are missing and it's too weak.
You know, what struck me is significant and it really had some meaning for me is when you said that the worse autism, you know, the worse the gut problems and the worse the behavior. And it seems to me, and maybe this is a Kim question, perhaps a Paul question too, isn't that sort of sad if someone just treats the behavior without looking what's behind creating that behavior? Does that make sense, Kim?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, that's something, you know, from my perspective and our show perspective, we're looking to understand autism, and this show is so valuable because it's looking at understanding autism from the biomedical perspective. You know, a lot of times on the show, Paul and I are talking about it from you know, a thinking perspective, you know, experience-based and stuff. And so there's a lot of layers to autism. And, you know, of course, a person's health is always first and foremost. And I tell families that, you know, if they contact me for consultations, I always make sure and help them to prioritize their resources. So actually, you know, if you're a family out there who's, you know, overwhelmed trying to sort things out, it's very important to focus on the foundation of, you know, health and making sure that you get that checked out so that any intervention that you do is most effective and that you're able to see things more clearly.
Yeah, let's get Paul in here. Paul, does that make sense to you as well? I mean, it's sort of logical. If someone's in pain, their behavior may be, you know, not as great as it could be. And in your travels, personally, have you seen that, or have you seen it with other people that you've known on the spectrum?
Well, I think Kim pretty much covered it very well that, you know, the truth is anytime you're trying to treat anything that, you know, you need to look at everything that's going on. When you have someone who's ill, you know, be it from GI issues or autoimmune issues or anything else, that it prevents you from isolating other symptoms. So, you know, it is a holistic issue in that, you know, and some symptoms block view of other symptoms, some behaviors block view of other behaviors. And so it's like peeling away the layers of an onion, that you're always working through every problem a person with autism is experiencing, and behind them you're finding new ones to address and attempt to treat.
Yeah, which is a good lesson, I think, for caregivers and parents out there that I suspect, and Kim, you probably know this rather well, there is a difference with people that, you know, specialists, facilitators, counselors in autism helping others. Having that holistic approach would seem to be extremely important. Would you agree, Kim?
Oh, definitely. No, I definitely agree. And that's why I love these shows. I'm very excited to have Dr. Adams today and tomorrow, because this is a layer of, or piece to that, you know, to the complexity of autism that we don't talk about often on our shows. So I'm really excited that that's what we're focusing on this month. But I'm wondering actually if we should maybe take a short break, and when we come back we can continue learning more about gut problems and autism and learn about the research that Dr. Adams is doing at Arizona State University.
Yeah, this will be great, Dr. Adams. We'll be right back with you. This is Understanding Autism, and we'll be right back to talk more about this very important topic in about 2 minutes. Be right back.
Buying or selling a home is one of the biggest events in your life. Wouldn't it be nice to have the guidance of a professional realtor that you can trust? I'm Tara Alves with HomeSmart, and I have been working with buyers and sellers in the Valley for well over a decade. As a native, I know the local market and I'm dedicated to meeting the needs of each and every client. I don't want to just list your home, I want to sell it and help you find a new place to call home. Call me for a free property valuation or for any real estate needs. Integrity, knowledge, professionalism, and results. That's what being a realtor means to me. Call today at 602-430-3397. That's 602-430-3397. Thank you.
Weidenauer, Heinzen, and Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4 of each month. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon and our very special guest, Dr. James Adams, PhD, President of Autism Society at Greater Phoenix. And Dr. Adams, you have a lot of stuff you've done. You've published over 30 scientific research studies on autism and several studies right on the topic we're talking about, gut problems and gut bacteria in children with autism. And it looks like you're currently co-leading a FDA-approved study on beneficial bacteria transfer for treating gut problems in children with autism. Can you talk a little bit about that, how that's going?
Sure. Yeah. Just to give a little bit of background, that we've known for a number of years that kids with autism have abnormal bacteria in their gut, and there have been several studies suggesting that. But then last year we published a very powerful new study where we used a new method, DNA-based method, because up till now people using culture methods can only look at maybe 30 to 50 of the 1,000 or so species in your gut. With this new DNA-based method that we have available at ASU, we can now look at all 1,000 of the bacteria in the gut and actually count how many of each you have. And so although we've known that gut bacteria are abnormal in kids with autism, most of the focus up till now has been on the bad bacteria. But we did is we also looked at all of the beneficial bacteria. And what we found really surprised us, that the kids with autism, instead of having 1,000 different species of bacteria, they were missing about 200 to 300 species of gut bacteria. They were just gone. And so kids with autism are missing a lot of their beneficial bacteria, making them very vulnerable to any of a wide range of bad bacteria to get in and cause problems. And so that's why we worked and made a proposal to the FDA to look into a very new type of treatment. 10 years ago, some researchers at UCLA had given an oral antibiotic called vancomycin to kids with autism, and they used it. It's a special antibiotic that stays only in the gut, and the kids were on it for 8 weeks, and these were kids who had major GI problems. And when they were on the vancomycin, they got a lot better. Their GI problems greatly improved, and their autism symptoms, surprisingly, also greatly improved. But then once they stopped treatment, then all those gains they had were lost. That it seems, although the vancomycin was able to kill off the bad bacteria, when they stopped the vancomycin, those bad bacteria came back. And we think the reason the bad bacteria came back is they didn't have, they were missing a lot of the beneficial bacteria they need to defend themselves. So what the FDA has allowed us to do is to begin a new study, and we're recruiting for it now, where we're going to use a combination of vancomycin to kill off the bad bacteria, and then we're going to reseed the gut with a lot of beneficial bacteria. And so it's a new type of treatment that we're very excited about. We have high hopes. Again, until we do the study, we can't say for sure, but we hypothesize that this combination of killing off the bad bacteria and reseeding with the new ones, we hope that this will result in improving the GI symptoms in the kids with autism and hopefully decreasing some of their autism symptoms. And I think if we can just get them feeling healthier, then that will improve their irritability, improve their attention and learning, all those good things.
That is fascinating. How long does a study like that take? I mean, is it going to be just one control group, or you're going to does FDA require you to do this over so many years with so many groups to make sure it's enough information?
Yeah, in general, the FDA requires three phases of treatment. So in the first study, the one we're approved to do now, it's an open-label study, meaning that every child we enroll will be treated, and so we'll be enrolling only 20 children. And what we're going to do is we'll give them this special combination of treatments, and then we'll treat them for 2 weeks with antibiotics, and then 8 weeks to reseed their gut bacteria. And we hope that that will be enough to treat them long term.
Wow, that's fascinating. And is there any expectation? Because you did say when you stopped the treatment the first time, the bad bacteria came back. By putting the good bacteria in, do you think that's something that will stick? But I know that's why you're doing the study, but any anticipation on that, expectation?
Yeah, that's what we hope, that the treatment we're using is where you take bacteria from a healthy person and give them from a healthy donor and then give them to the individual sick. So there's a very nasty gut problem called C. difficile, which especially elderly people catch, mostly from nursing homes and hospitals. And it makes them very, very sick. They get very severe GI problems. And although sometimes it can be treated by antibiotics, often it just gets worse and worse, and it's deadly. That actually about 15,000 people a year in the U.S. die from this really nasty gut infection. And they found that by treating them just one time with a dose of bacteria from a healthy person, it cures them 92% of the time, and usually within just a few days. So they've gone from a life-threatening disease that they're dying from, and then in a few days they're cured and they stay cured. So it's miraculous for C. diff infections, and there are over 27 studies on it for C. diff infections. So now the FDA says any physician in the country can use this treatment for C. diff, and now people have used this treatment for several other GI disorders like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, chronic constipation. It works. It's helpful in all of those conditions that I mentioned, sometimes quite dramatically. And since it works for so many different conditions, we're very hopeful it will also work for kids with autism. But again, we won't know until we do the study.
And what are the ages that would be that you're going to be testing and having as part of the study?
We're going to be we're limited to looking at children who are ages 7 to 17 because this treatment has mostly been used on adults, but it has been used in some children as well. We're especially encouraged because one of the gastroenterologists on our study is from Australia, and he's actually treated close to 5,000 people around the world with this special super probiotic. But he also has treated 9 children with autism. And if you like, I can read you a statement he wrote about his experience treating those 9 kids with autism.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So he treated 9 kids. He found that these were kids with autism with severe enough GI problems to go and see him, one of the top gastroenterologists in the world. And whereas C. diff, it takes just one dose. Kids with autism, he found, were much harder to treat. So he treated them daily for 3 months. So it took a lot longer to treat them. But what he said, and this is a direct quote from him, and it's what we submitted to the FDA, he said, after 3 months of the cultured microbiota, there was a substantial improvement in bowel function. The parents noticed a substantial reduction in the odor of their stool. Several children started the study with abdominal cramps, which disrupted their sleep. By the end of the treatment, their abdominal cramps were reduced, and they were able to sleep throughout the night. Parents reported marked increase in vocabulary. clear improvement on task performance, and new ability to listen to parents' requests. So basically, after 3 months of treatment, these 9 children were doing much better. None of them came back to see him for further treatment. But he did run into one of his patients a dozen years later, and he found out this patient, his GI symptoms had remained cured, and also his autism symptoms had improved so much that he had performed normally in high school just like the other kids. So the family was just thrilled.
Well, that's just fascinating. That's amazing, actually.
Yeah, so we're very encouraged by this. And so, again, we won't know for sure until we do the formal study that we're doing now. But we're very hopeful that our data is very strong, that kids with autism are missing several hundred bacteria. And standard probiotics on the market might seem like the right thing to give, but standard probiotics contain only 1 to 10 strains of bacteria. And remember, kids with autism are missing several hundred. And so giving 1 to 10 really doesn't help too much. And also, unfortunately, standard probiotics, the bacteria in them are the ones that grow in milk. They're not the bacteria that grow very much in your gut. They aren't very important strains. And so although probiotics are a good idea in practice, a good idea in principle, in practice, they just don't seem to be very effective for most of the kids, and that's why we want to do this study.
Wow, that's very encouraging what you just said. That's incredible. We're going to take one more quick break, and the question I'm going to ask when we come back is I suspect you'd need donors perhaps to get the gut bacteria from healthy people, and we'll come right back after this break. This is Understanding Autism, and we'll be right back.
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
It's always great to have a friend in business. That's why we encourage you to reach out to Brandon Ross at Burt Carpenter Financial, a full-service residential lender. Call now for exceptional service and an accurate pre-qualification. Connect with him online at BrandonRossHomeLoans.com or by phone at 602-953-7826, 602-953-7826. Brandon Ross, NMLS number 858655, and Burt Carpenter Financial, NMLS number 142159.
Buying or selling a home is one of the biggest events in your life. Wouldn't it be nice to have the guidance of a professional realtor that you can trust? I'm Tara Alves with HomeSmart, and I have been working with buyers and sellers in the Valley for well over a decade. As a native, I know the local market, and I'm dedicated to meeting the needs of each and every client. I don't want to just list your home. I want to sell it and help you find a new place to call home. Call me for a free property valuation or for any real estate needs. Integrity, knowledge, professionalism, and results. That's what being a realtor means to me. Call today at 602-430-3397. That's 602-430-3397. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Understanding Autism, live from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon, our very special guest, Dr. James Adams, president of the Autism Society of Greater Phoenix, along as also president of Autism Nutrition Research Center. And Dr. Adams, are you looking for donors? Is that how you get the healthy bacteria?
We do get healthy bacteria from donors, but actually what we're doing is we're working with a group out of from University of Minnesota that for normal, the way this treatment is normally done for C. diff patients is they'll just take, and this is going to sound kind of gross, but let me just explain. When someone has a bowel movement, when they poop, about half of that poop is live bacteria. And so for curing C. diff, what they'll do is just take a little poop from a healthy donor, often it's just the spouse, and with a colonoscopy or an enema, they put it in the person, and that's what cures them. Just a little bit of poop cures them, usually within a few days, 92% cure rate. Otherwise, a good chance they'll get very ill or die. What we're doing is we're dealing with the next generation of fecal transplant, where the group at University of Minnesota takes the material and purifies it. So they get rid of all the waste material, so there's just the live bacteria that are left, just like a probiotic you'd buy in a health food store. And so using these live bacteria, then they just suspend it in a liquid, and that's what we're going to use for treatment. But we have to screen for the donors very carefully, just like you would for a blood donor. We screen these donors using the same procedure for a blood donor, and then we go way beyond there. So we do a lot of additional testing, a lot of additional questions of donors, and then even after they donate, we'll check back with them again 2 weeks later. So far, fecal transplants seem to be extremely safe. No one's ever died from one. No one's ever become seriously injured by one. The worst, no one's ever caught an infection from one. So they check for hepatitis, they check for many different communicable diseases, and that way they help prevent. And so no one's ever caught a disease from a fecal transplant. The worst that's ever happened is that because some of these people who are getting it have very severe GI problems, sometimes they'll have a temporary flare-up of their GI problem, so their symptoms will get a little worse for a week or two, but then they improve. So as your gut bacteria change, there can be some temporary transient problems in maybe 20% of cases if they have severe GI problems, and then they seem to do well. For our study with kids with autism, we're going to exclude those with really severe GI issues, so that way we only expect the kids with autism to improve.
Now, here's a two-part question. One is, how many donors do you need for this first group of 20? And second is, the group of 20, these children from, 7 to 17, I think you said, do they have to go through a physical exam prior to going into the group?
Yeah, so all the kids with autism are screened. Our medical physician checks all of the medical records. The donors are from University of Minnesota. They've already screened them. And the screening process is so rigorous that 90% of the people don't qualify. 90% of the general public is not healthy enough to be a donor. So we're very strict in the donation procedure. But actually, we have all of those donations, all of those samples, sitting in our freezer at ASU. We're just ready to recruit now for our study. But we are recruiting about 20 typical kids because, once again, we want to just collect poop from typical kids and compare it against the kids with autism and reaffirm what we found earlier. If instead of flushing it away, if you want to get paid for it, please sign up on our website because we need the poop from typical kids to compare it against the poop from kids with autism.
Oh, and you actually will compensate these people, the kids, for contributing.
$25 for each poop sample, and we ask for one blood draw one time, too, and they get $50 for that.
Wow. Well, we'll get the word out. And how, is this, you know, if as you think about this, what's some of the things that you need for you and your team to even make this more successful? I mean, is the word out there enough? Do you need more resources, contributions? What are some of the things that you think would help in this research?
Well, we've been very blessed that the research that we did just to find out what was the cause of the GI problems, this decrease in bacteria, the seed money for that came from our annual zoo walk. So all the families helped raise the money, and then all the families, both the autism families and the typical kids, who donated samples so we could test them to figure out what was different in the kids with autism. And the university, ASU, was so excited about the research that we did that the Arizona Board of Regents funded, gave us $300,000 in funding for ASU, U of A, and NAU to all work together on this study. So we're all working together to conduct this treatment study. The FDA has approved it. That took quite a while to go through all the rigorous process for that. And so now we're about two-thirds of the way through recruiting families. We have a few more openings for kids with autism ages 7 to 17 who have got problems and would like to try to treat them. And we also need typical kids of the same age, especially boys, because most kids with autism are boys. And we need boys who are willing to give up their poop in return for cash. So you've heard,
wow,
you know, gold for cash. We give cash for gold. We give cash for poop.
We will definitely get the word out, no question about that. It's remarkable, some of these things. And if there was more research, do you think this would, or I should say, you know, on the same quality that you do, Dr. Adams, is that what is also needed to have more things going on at one time? I know there's so many competing organizations for money, for funding. Is that a frustration for you? Do you wish more people would get involved? How do you see it?
Well, my frustration is that groups like the NIH, which supplies a lot of the funding, funds mostly basic research and funds very little on treatment. And my philosophy is just the opposite. I want to focus on treatment and do good science as we go along with that. But I'd like to see a lot more focus on treatment. I've seen probably 30-some papers on GI problems in kids with autism, and I've seen very, very few treatment studies related to it. And I'd really like to see, really there's only one classic study on treating GI problems in autism. And that was the one I mentioned that was only successful temporarily. And so we want to do much more.
Well, this is fantastic. And let's talk about one of your funding sources that is coming up, I believe, October 4th. Kim, why don't you chime in a little bit on this one, the Zoo Walk. Tell us a little bit how people can get involved in the Zoo Walk.
Well, we do Autism with Excellence and Understanding Autism Radio Show. We set up a team, and we would love to have people join our team or consider making a donation. We love this event. We love supporting the research that ASU is doing, that Dr. Adams is doing. And if you are interested, if you're listening and you want more information how to join our team, you can go to our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/understandingautismradio. And this year, Paul and I will both be there. And we're actually looking into planning something a little special show-wise or some sort of social event that actually we're probably going to plan next week, so stay tuned for that. But definitely consider helping out. It's a wonderful event, not only because it does support funding for these very necessary, you know, research studies, but also it's great for the community. It's really nice to see families out there with their children in a totally, you know, accepting environment. You know, anybody can come. You can bring your kids and strollers. Individuals with autism can come walk. It's just a really wonderful event, and we'd love to have, you know, as many people support as possible.
It is a great event. I've been there, of course, the last, I don't know how many years, but just not being a great event, the good it does for children, for adults on the spectrum is phenomenal, and it helped Dr. Adams to do some of these research deals to really make great strides. And Dr. Adams, you have to be really thrilled with that.
Yeah, I'm very excited. You know, it's as Kim says, we have so many supporters out there who are able to help us, and to then be able to take that support and to channel it into meaningful research and try to come up with answers to try to improve the quality of life for people with autism. You know, if we can just treat the GI issues alone, for many individuals on the spectrum, they'd lead a much happier life, and they'd be very grateful.
No question. And Kim, is that October 4th, right?
Yes, October 4th. Yes. And again, you can join our team. I know we have a lot of people who enjoy interacting with Paul and I. We're both going to be there supporting. You can go to our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/understandingautismradio, and you can find the link for the walk and learn how to join our team and support the cause.
Looking forward to it. And Dr. Adams, thank you so much for joining us today, but we're excited to have you join us tomorrow as well, talking about seizures in children with autism and a new study and how to treat them. I'm looking forward to that. Always a pleasure having you on, Dr. Adams.
Thank you very much, all of you.
You're more than welcome. And Kim and Paul, see you tomorrow, 3 to 4, Understanding Autism. Again, Dr. Adams will be joining us. I'm excited about that. And stay dry, Kim, Paul. It may rain again tonight, so be careful. Anyway, everyone have a great night, and we'll talk to everyone tomorrow, 3 to 4.